RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You're listening to 30 Mindless Minutes, part of the ChairShot Radio Network, on thechairshot.com and all your favorite podcasting platforms. Remember, always use your head. Lend me your ears and welcome back to another episode of 30 Mindless Minutes. This is the second half of a discussion I started last week with my friend Johnny. We had an awesome talk about gaming. We ran out of time, as we do, as you guys know, and you've been following this show for a little while. I keep these episodes to 30 minutes. I don't want to run long. I don't want to take up any more of anybody's day than I already do, but there was a lot to unpack with Johnny. There's a lot of gaming stuff. He likes to talk gaming. He's been a great guest so far, so we are going to continue that discussion. Johnny, when we left off last week, we were talking PC gaming and mods and things like that, and I had a question that I wanted to ask you about the mods. You had talked about where to find them for PC.
Yes, sir.
What about consoles? I mean, you gave me the website for the PC, but what about consoles? Where do people go for that?
You don't.
You don't.
Unless the developer decides that they want to insert mods into the game, which is actually the game I showed you last week, Lords of the Fallen, they added, unless the developers add in native mods, you do not have access to it.
Okay. I kind of thought that. I wasn't real sure because I always heard people talk about mods because I remember one of the earliest games that I played on PC was the original Sims game. And you could get patches and aftermarket mods and things like that for that game. Even then, we're going back 30 years, you know, almost 30 years that the original Sims game came out. So you could do it then. So I knew it was available for PC. I didn't think it was available for consoles. But again, I'm speaking from my, I have no clue what I'm talking about. This is why you're the guest. You know, you're the gamer. You know these things. You're educating me as we go along and hopefully educating some of our listeners who casually game or game but don't know these things. This is great information for them to pick apart. So you recently built your own PC. Tell me about that process.
Hell of a journey. Also, just to let you know, my mom might be coming back here real soon. So if you hear dogs barking or anything.
Sure.
Okay. So, it was a process. It was an expensive process. It was a stressful process too. So, there was like 14, 15 parts I had to get for it. And I didn't want to buy a pre-built because it's just, you have to go with whatever they have available. You can't customize it or anything like that unless you order online. And so I actually had been doing research for the past 5 years, 5 or 6 years to build a PC. And in that time, more and more stuff just kept going out. So finally, I talked to one of my friends. He set me up with a build. Little did I know that this build was going to be probably one of the best builds available right now, especially for budget people. I ended up, it's an intimidating price, but I ended up spending about $2,500.
Okay.
Yeah. But this is an investment. I never have to buy another console again. I never have to buy another PC again unless something major happens. If a part messes up, you can take it apart, pull that part out, buy a new one, replace it.
So I would assume that as graphic cards change, evolve, as parts and pieces evolve as they have for the last, 60 years of home computer use, you just rotate out like graphics cards and sound cards and things like that?
Yeah, but it's not as simple as that, though, okay. Because some parts are not compatible with other parts.
Okay.
And generally, you don't really have to replace a graphics card until like once every 5 or so years. And okay. Even then, the one I have should be good for at least 10 years as long as it doesn't mess up. But it's a complicated process. It is nerve-wracking to get into, but it is interesting. So, like the whole time I was building my PC, I was jittery and shaky, but I was kind of enjoying putting it together. I was talking to a friend over Discord and he was helping me out with it. Then I had another friend come over and, I think it took me 15 hours to put the whole thing together and get it running.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that as you've seen, as you follow me on X once in a while, I build little scale model cars. Mm-hmm. So when you're messing with these little intricate things and you don't want to screw anything up, and obviously you're building this not only for entertainment, but practical purposes with my cars. If I break it, it's car. It's not, it's going to sit on my shelf. It's not something I'm ever going to use, but it's the same type of stress where you're like, okay, you're putting this itty bitty little 1/25th scale thing together and you want it to look good, but you also want it to look right. And for you functionally do what you need it to do. Yes. So I totally feel that. I totally feel the frustration and the anxiety over doing that. And that actually makes me feel a little bit better because my son just had a PC built and he didn't drop that much money, but he dropped for him a fair amount of money. I want to say it was somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500 for a friend of his to build a computer.
Yeah.
And the kid built the computer, brought it, and didn't work. And we're like, okay, what the hell? This went on for like over a year. Because the kid doesn't live in town. He lives like, we're about 3 hours south of Jacksonville. This kid lives in Jacksonville. So the kid would take the PC back. And I'm like, looking at my son, I'm like, dude, you spent X amount of money and you still don't have a PC and it's been a year. What are we doing here? Like in my head, I'm thinking this kid ripped him off. You know, I'm like, okay, this kid ripped him off, took his money. He's going to build his own PC and my kid's going to be out, you know, X amount of dollars. So, and then, but he would bring the PC back. So I'm like, okay, what's going on? And so understanding it from your perspective now, it's not as simple as putting Legos together.
Yeah, it's not.
So, again, we're going on my limited scope of what I know about computers and, you know, electronics and things like that. It's not as simple as just plug and play and, you know, everything works.
Yeah. So I actually had trouble turning my PC on a couple of days ago and I was freaking the hell out. I almost called my friend at 4 a.m. in the morning to get him over here to work with me on it. And it turns out it was something so minute. I was, because the button was on, but the PC didn't turn on. The fans did. It was just something so simple as I forgot to plug my mouse and keyboard back in after rearranging it and it didn't turn on.
Yeah. Isn't that the IT question? Have you tried unplugging it and plugging it back in? It really is. And we all joke about that from the IT standpoint.
There's a reason it's a cliche.
Absolutely. And guys like me are the reason. That is absolutely a mistake I will make. I will unplug some shit. And
Did you try unplugging it, plugging it back in? Did you try blowing in it? Did you try turning it off and turning it back on?
Yeah.
The three major ones right there.
So question I wanted to ask you, because my girlfriend, this is why I was thinking nephew when I was thinking gaming earlier. My girlfriend's nephew just built his own computer in the last year, and he actually has like a water cooling system. Do you have something like that as part of
I have fans.
Fans, okay.
From what I understand, water coolers are better
because
they can keep it more cool, but it's a lot more hectic to take care of.
Okay.
I am a simple man. Yeah. I do not want to have to deal with potential condensation getting inside my PC because I like to have my air conditioner on.
Yeah.
So no, I hear you. I have it on in the winter. I'm one of those people who always has their fan on, always has their air conditioner on. I could be in here and have icicles forming on my body and I would still have that air conditioner on.
Still have it going. That's me. We have the fan going 24/7 and actually, my girlfriend gets more cold than I do. Like, so the temperature drops below like 68. She's like, okay, we got to turn heat on. So I'm like, we'll turn the heat on. Me, I'll open the house up and just throw on more clothes. It's always easier to throw more clothes on if you're cold than it is to take them off if you're hot. So I get that. But yeah, I was curious because I didn't even know water cooling for a computer was a thing.
I didn't know about it until my friend asked me if it could hold water coolers. I'm like, what
are you even talking about? Yeah, because I'm thinking about having this kid, you know, because I told you I want to go ahead and have a PC. I'm going to have somebody build it for me. I don't have the patience or honestly the time to build a PC, but and not just for gaming. Like there will be little games that I'll find that I'll probably want to play. And, you know, I'll link up with you on Steam if you're on there. But primarily for my podcasting, you know, because I want to get into the live streaming end of the podcasting. And I think this laptop will be fine, but some of his, keys on the keyboard don't work. And there's a couple other little things that are issues with this. It's fine for what I'm doing right now for like the basic podcasting, but for what I, my vision for not only this show, but the Mindless Wrestling Podcast is to eventually get into live streaming and live broadcasting so that I can interact with my audience. So, but I'm going to need something a bit more with a bit more kick to it to pull that off.
Luckily, you won't need anything too powerful. You can actually get a PC build that is like $100 more than a PlayStation Pro for like $950. Oh my God. I can't believe consoles have gotten so expensive, but you could get something for probably not 900 anymore thanks to AI, but thank you, Bubble. But you could probably get something for around a $1,500 will do what you need to do for the next decade.
That's my window is about $1,500. Cause like I said, that's give or take about what he paid for hers or his, it does everything. Like he plays Roblox. He may have a couple other games that he plays. Like I don't go in and monitor him. So he's 21 years old, man. I don't pay attention to what that kid does on his gaming, but it's great for what he needs. And he thinks it's obviously better than this laptop he just gave me. So yeah, I don't need like my stepson spent like $2,300 for an Alien War laptop, which he loves. Yeah, it's perfect for what he needs. I am not buying a $2,300.
Yeah, don't let the price that he told you or the price that I told you of almost $3,000 intimidate you because there are builds for a reason.
Yeah.
My build is going to let me stream, record, and play my consoles through my PC as well so I can stream and record them. It is a all-purpose PC, so with all-purpose comes a higher price. You can find one perfectly suitable for you that will get the job done and you can still use it for other stuff for $1,500.
You're the man. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Yeah. Well, let's do that. Let's talk about a little bit of streaming. That was a nice little segue there. You have recently, it sounds like. Now you've been streaming for a little while. Like you streamed
I would say I've been streaming for the better part of 3 years.
Okay. So the streaming, is this something that you're just doing casually for fun, or is this something that you're actively trying to build towards like a little bit of supplemental income or, you know, eventually maybe doing this as a job?
I will probably never turn it into a job. I do want to get an audience. I do want to create a niche, but it starts out as a hobby. I just want to be able to make my form of content and put it out there for everybody else to be able to say, hey, this is cool. Not for me. Or this guy sucks. He's such a shill or such a hater or something like that. I want to make something my friends can enjoy and people who don't like me can hate.
And that's really where I'm at with the podcasting is like, would I like to be able to bring in a little supplemental income? Absolutely. I'm not going to bullshit anybody. It would be awesome. But at the same time, I think when you become a big name, big name streamer, that also invites a lot of problems.
Yeah.
It invites negativity as you have found with the gaming and the wrestling community. And the bigger name you are, the more negativity that you attract. You know, and obviously, you know, people on the internet do what they do. They're hiding behind a keyboard and they want to come in and for whatever reason mess with people. I don't understand it. So, yeah, I definitely find a little niche, do the things that I like to do. And if people like it, they like it. Great. You know, come on, check it out. Have a good time. Comment, you know, maybe. And again, educationally, maybe you'll give them a hint or a trick or maybe somebody's stuck on a game that you're playing.
Yeah.
Figured it out.
Yeah, so I actually have a relatively small viewer base. I think I think my average is like 4 viewers, and most of those are friends in Discord. I did a 24-hour stream not too long ago. Oh, my God. I think I got like 20 – my peak viewers at that was like 20 to 30 people. And then by the end of it, people watched the whole stream as a VOD, and I got like 120 views on it. But even if there's just one person or even nobody watching the stream, I will still go through with it because I want it to be there because it creates memories. I play games for the first time on stream, and I can go back and I can rewatch those. Like I was rewatching my first stream of the Elden Ring DLC that came out on my birthday, and it was right after my dad's passing who bought me that DLC, and it preserved a lot of memories that I otherwise wouldn't have as documentation. Yeah. So
it ends up being a time capsule for where you were in your life and, you know, obviously something very, very personal to you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally get that. And that's entirely identifiable. Yeah.
And if I have friends who decide to watch along the way, to share those memory with. That's really what it's all about. If I make money from it, sure. Yeah. I don't want to become a big streamer. I just want to put the stuff out there to catalog and for to laugh at and to enjoy and look back here in about 10 years and say, "Huh, remember when I did that stupid thing of parrying a hard boss only?" Or something stupid like that.
I was doing that on my original, like, I've had a YouTube channel for almost as long as YouTube has been a thing. Like, I think I created this channel maybe 4 or 5 years after YouTube was originally launched, and I've had it forever. I've rotated out what type of content I do on there.
Back when they had the star system.
Pretty much the star system and the partner system, and everything was vlogs. Like, it was vlog. That was the core of what YouTube was just people. You know, that's what it was founded on. And, you know, I was in on that, the ground floor of that. But later on, as that fell apart and vloggers went away and content became a thing, and I started doing, like, I think it was PS3 or PS4. I was streaming WWE games. I would put matches together. But it was very basic because I didn't have a headset, microphone, the whole gimmick. And I was literally had my YouTube channel linked to my PlayStation channel. I would record a match, upload it, and it would be whatever it was. So, and I always found that to be very fun. And it's a fun thing because I can go back to it now, like you were saying, look at it and go, haha, that's what I was doing in, you know, 2017, you know, look at how, and then I can also look at the graphics of that game then versus what, you know, 2K is doing with WWE games now and go, wow, what a difference. Like, you know, the features and the look and the feel and the vibe of the game. It's neat, as I said, like a time capsule to go back and revisit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what YouTube streaming and gaming is to me. It is flashbacks, remembrance, a journey of how you, because I believe I started playing Elden Ring around the same time I started streaming. I abused summons. I abused heavy builds. I didn't know how to play the game. And then a couple of years later, here I am beating it without summons and not using the level up system.
Yeah.
And then crying my eyes out when I beat it.
Oh, see, I'm the cheat code king. I never God mode. I watch you on X, and I see you've gotten into this thing for the last few days, and you've commented a few times over the last few weeks. Somebody will post something about how all games deserve to have an easy mode, and that triggers you. I know it triggers you. Meanwhile, I'm looking at it like, I think I agree with it. Not that I disagree with you, because I totally get it from your perspective, being your friend and being understanding your mind and how you look at and approach games. But I'm also looking at it from my sad gamer perspective, going, I think they should all have easy mode because I play them all on easy mode. And if I can play God mode on it, like on the PlayStation games, a lot of times, like I'll play The Sims and I'll do the money cheat because I don't feel like getting a job. I want to get a job and spend months of my life trying to accumulate enough money to buy a brand new TV. Screw it. I'll throw in the money cheat, get myself $50,000, and I'll go outfit my house with all the latest and greatest stuff. Yeah. So that's the type of gamer I am. I'm easy and just like, but it cracks me up when I stick. Like, I want to comment, but I don't want to hurt my friends.
Oh, no, by all means. I encourage people to disagree with me because I love perspectives. Like, there's this one guy, me and him, his name is Odin. We disagree all the time, but we can still have a civilized conversation. And my point is not that there shouldn't be difficulty settings. It's just that some games should not have them. Like, would beating Melania in Elden Ring have the same impact if I knew that I could lower the difficulty? Not that the difficulty is there, but can I lower it? No, I cannot. So I have now beaten what is essentially the hardest boss in gaming history until Promise Concert Redon came out without knowing that I couldn't do anything. I either beat her or I don't. And there's a concept that was created with Dark Souls 1 when it came out. It was called hollowing. It was a mechanic. As you died, your character would shrivel up and stuff, but it was also a real life mechanic to where you only ever truly hollowed and failed your mission if you uninstalled the game and quit. And it was a mechanic that the creator of the game, Hidetaki Miyazaki, came up with, where no matter how overwhelming the odds may be, there's always a way out, even when it's unfair. Never hollow, never give up. Right. And you don't get that same feeling if you can lower the difficulty and beat the boss without taking negative damage.
Yeah. And that's relatable because there have been games, you know, in the past where I would play and not reset the difficulty setting. And I like the first Metal Gear games that I played, Metal Gear Solid, Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3, like Snake Eaters, one of the first games I remember saying, no, I'm not resetting, because you could set the difficulty on it.
Yeah.
And I didn't intentionally. I'm like, I'm playing this on just the normal. Obviously, I didn't put it on the hardest difficulty because I'm just not that type of a gamer. But I played it on the normal difficulty, and I had a bitch of a time. Like, I died and died and died again and then died again more times than I can count. But when you finally beat that boss at the end of that section, it really is a sense of accomplishment.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes you feel like, yes, finally. It's like you
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Exhale.
Yeah. Yeah, but and what makes it even more breathtaking is when you did it knowing you couldn't lower it, like knowing right. The option wasn't there. Games should have easy modes. Some games shouldn't. Elden Ring, you can go through there and you can abuse summons. A goldfish beat that game.
Wow.
Yeah, a viewer named Scumnut put his controller with the sensor on it underneath a fish bowl. And the fish actually beat the first Remembrance boss, Godric the Grafted, who is a meme in the community once you understand him, but thematically he's a hard boss. And a guy who is paralyzed from the neck down beat Promised Consort Radahn, the hardest boss in gaming history, with voice commands.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. That's awesome.
So, but the whole thing about difficulty is just, it's such an upsetting concept because it's somebody who has nothing to do with the game. And don't worry, this is not an insult towards you, but this is somebody who knows what the core of Souls games are, saying that it should appeal to him before he even puts in any effort. At some point, you got to meet the developers halfway on their vision.
Right. Well, and also you should know, like, there are games I avoid because I know they're just going to be outside of my skill level, and they may look awesome, and they may have a story because I'm a story guy. I like unraveling stories, and this is why, you know, when we talked about Mass Effect, and I'm going to tell my Mass Effect story in just a minute, because we're kind of running long on time here. But if I can unlock a story, that's my thing. But if I see a game and I'm looking at them like, that just looks like it's going to be way too hard, I won't even buy it.
Yeah,
I might be depriving myself of an awesome, awesome gaming experience, but I'm also not such a hardcore gamer that I feel like I need to buy everything and that it should be catered to me as a gamer.
Yeah, there are 10,000 games that get released every single month. So roughly.
I can find 10 that I can like and that I can play. You know, it's that easy.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I'm also, while I will sit here and defend games not having difficulties when they are supposed to not have them, I am also the type of person that will encourage and help people as well. Like, that's one thing that a bunch of people who yell at me and call me an elitist don't point out is the fact that I've encouraged people and helped people get through the games. Like, I have told somebody how to straight up cheese every single boss in the game.
If it helps them get along, that's the type of stuff we should be doing online.
I'm a huge questionnaire person, so anybody can ask me literally anything and I'll help them.
Real quick, because I promised I would, and I can't remember whether it was this episode or last episode, my Mass Effect story, and then we're going to roll into a couple quick things before we get out of here for the final time. So first time I played Mass Effect, I was probably when they released the trilogy as a box set.
That was when I played it, too.
About 12 to 15 years ago. It was in the early 2000s. It was in the early 2010s. A buddy of mine bought it for me for my birthday. It came in this nice box. It was all three games. He's like, man, you got to play this game. And I had been aware of the controversy surrounding Mass Effect 3 and the ending and how they went back and kind of retooled the ending a little bit to kind of make people a little bit happier. You could do it as like a DLC. So I was aware of all that, but I'd never played them. My buddy's like, look, man, you got to play these. And it was one of those friends, our gaming tastes kind of differed a little bit. So I was a little skeptical. So I plugged it in, started Mass Effect 1, and I just hated it. Like, and I'm not a first person shooter. So in my limited gaming scope, I'm like, this is Call of Duty in space. Is, again, looking at it very, very just unintelligently. This is Call of Duty in space. I liked Call of Duty. I didn't love Call of Duty. But I'm like, okay, let me give it a try. I got into the Citadel. Like, when you first get off of Eden Prime, you get into the Citadel, and I got lost. I was like, you know what? I can't figure out what the hell I'm supposed to do. I've accumulated this team. I've got two or three team members. What the hell am I supposed to do with them? I put it away, didn't do anything with it. It sat there for 6 months. I boxed everything up, went to GameStop, and ended up buying, traded them in, got like $11.12 for all three games in a box.
That's pretty good.
GameStop back then. And I used it as a down payment on Diablo 3, which I fell in love with. So I didn't touch it. And then years went by, and yeah, I make more friends in the gaming community. Like my co-host on the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, Jason, loves Mass Effect. Like it's one of his, it's probably a top three all-time game for him. So I was like, let me give it another shot. PlayStation had the box set. It was remastered on sale. I was like, let me give this another shot. Try it again. Look at it with, you know, 10-year-old older eyes. Played it again, and I just fell in love with it because then I started paying attention to the lore and the backstory. Because, again, remember, I'm a story gamer. I love good stories, and the lore with Mass Effect just drew me in, and I found myself, like, I lost days. Like, the whole weekend would just be gone into Mass Effect, and I think I'd finally beat all three games, which for me is incredibly quick, in less than a month. But keep in mind, I don't get to game a whole lot. And like, I'll have like one or two days where I can game all day. And then I'll go weeks between work and life and girlfriend and other things that I like to do, my other hobbies. I don't get to game for a while. So it takes me a while to beat a game. And I'd say that trilogy is the first one since the original Metal Gear games that I played to that. And I take that back. I did play the Last of Us like that. The first Last of Us game I played and played and played and played to death until I finally beat it. So let's get it real quick before we get into our last little thing here. Just push your streams real quick, your social media stuff.
I am on Twitter as Pale Horse Rom. I am on YouTube, and I will soon be off Twitch since I'm moving to YouTube as Demon King Hiei. And that's pretty much it. I am on Discord. Though I do have that, I will have that linked into my YouTube description if anybody goes there. So, yeah.
Okay. So, real quick, while we got a couple minutes left, three games that you think are flying under the radar that you think people should play.
Okay. Number one is an easy one, Lords of the Fallen 2023. Fantastic mechanic, or a fantastic game with one of the most unique mechanics I ever see. You run around with a lamp. A Bray Wyatt type esque lamp, and you can use it to seamlessly transition between two different worlds layered on top of each other. So become and it's like the living world and the undead world. And if you die, you get sent to the undead world, but you can go in at any time. And if you die in that, your progress resets back to the last checkpoint.
Oh, that's pretty wild. Cool.
Another one would probably be. This one was popular about when it first came out, but it hasn't really been talked about much lately. Nier Automata, the only game that's ever made me cry from its credits alone.
Oh wow! Okay,
yeah. So, play that. It has 26 different endings. Most of them are just random nonsense, but ending E is the saddest thing I've ever seen. And for a third one, I would probably say Wu Chang Fallen Feathers.
Okay. All right. Well, we are out of time once again. Johnny, thank you so much. This has been awesome. This has been a great two-part episode. I have enjoyed the hell out of having you on here. We're going to have you back at some point.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to get out of here. Again, you've been listening to 30 Mindless Minutes. I hope you enjoyed this talk. I get you out of here in a half an hour or less because I know you got shit to do, and we'll see you next week. Intro music provided royalty-free by Audionautics. That's www.audionautics.com. My go-to for all my podcasting royalty-free music needs.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.